Hello, and welcome back to Great History Stories. Exciting news! Unless the numbers completely fall off a cliff, we will hit our march to 10,000 this week. There is the small problem of the place that I was going to print the t-shirt off of is currently under lockdown for coronavirus, but we will figure it out. So make sure you like us on Facebook next week for a chance to win. But enough about that. For now, I invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy Underdogs, episode 10, Plagues. In 1950 at Los Alamos National Laboratory, a couple of scientists were having lunch. They were doing some pretty simple math, at least for people of their caliber. They figured that the universe had been around for some 14 billion years, and that there were more than a billion trillion stars out there. And of those billion trillion stars, there must be millions of planets very similar to Earth out there that could support life. If we, the simple human race, could achieve space travel in such a relatively short period of time, surely others would be able to do the same as well. The odds that we were alone in the universe were so astronomically small that it would be almost laughable to believe that we here on Earth were the only living species in the galaxy, let alone the only spacefaring species. Satisfied in the math, there was a pause in the conversation as they resumed eating their meal, confident that there must be alien life out there, until Enrico Fermi, a renowned nuclear physicist, broke the silence and asked, quote, "But where is everybody?" End quote. And thus the Fermi paradox was born. The eternal struggle between the overwhelming odds that alien life exists, pitted against the facts that we haven't seen any proof that it does. And as the early westbound pioneers of the Americas made their ways into unknown lands, traveling through vast plains of fertile farmland, through lush river valleys, and through a truly vibrant and beautiful landscape, they too can't help but wonder, where is everybody? This was prime real estate for a civilization to grow in, but there wasn't one here. Why? This episode is diverging off the path a little bit, but it is topical and has a direct impact on the story of the West as a whole, and thus the story of the Rocky Mountain Fur Company and Hugh Glass. So I ask you again, where is everybody? Obviously, there are some Native Americans out here, but not in the numbers you would expect. The land here is ripe for the taking. There should be vast, complex networks of colossal tribes in the West. Tribes that should be communicating and trading with each other. People that should be allying and warring against each other. There should be at least one powerful empire here in the West, but there's not. So, where is everybody? The answer is that there were powerful nations in the West. But those days are long gone. Those Arikarans that just did battle against Hugh Glass and company along the river, they are just the scraps. They are the leftovers of what was once a mighty empire. But those days are gone. So, what happened to them? To answer that question, we have to go back. Way back. And it starts with animals. Specifically, what animals humans can domesticate and where those animals come from. Domesticating animals is one of the most powerful tools in our human arsenal. We can train animals to plow our fields, to provide us with food, or to transport us over long distances. In short, if you can domesticate an animal, you have laid the groundwork for a powerful civilization because you can produce more food with less effort in a more centralized place. You don't have to go off into the wilds and hunt down your dinner for the night. In the same way that you can domesticate plants as a steady source of food, you can do the same with animals, and your civilization will explode because of it. But not all animals are created equal. You have to do some very important math to figure out which animals you should bother penning up and which you should simply let go. For example, a cow consumes 10 pounds of grass and turns it into 1 pound of cow. We can't eat grass, obviously, but we can eat cow. Therefore, it's economically sound for us to invest in domesticating a cow. On the other hand, a tiger consumes 10 pounds of meat and turns it into 1 pound of tiger. Beyond the fact that taming a tiger would be dangerous at best, it's simply not economically viable for the masses to tame and domesticate tigers. You have to be able to pen the animal too. A buffalo, for example, may seem like a larger, more hairy cow, but it is far, far more dangerous. A buffalo is a tank on hooves. It will run over any barricade you put in its way, it travels in massive herds that make them difficult to control, and they can leap 6 feet into the sky and move at 40 miles an hour. If you are a mere mortal on foot, you cannot build a pen large enough and tall enough to domesticate the buffalo. Even now, with all of our modern technology, we are barely able to keep these animals controlled, and we are just scratching the surface of domesticating them. A simple rule to live by is this. If it lives on the farm, it's domesticated. So horses, cows, pigs, sheep, donkey, goats, chicken, ox, these are the premier farm animals that we have domesticated that are the roots of civilization as we know it. Without them, our world would be a much, much different place. But there's something interesting about these animals, their geography. Pigs, cows, sheep, donkeys, and goats all come from the Near East and Middle East, horses in East Europe, chicken and ox in Asia. And so these domesticated animals laid the groundwork for vast, sprawling civilizations in which cities flourished. Cities like Babylon, Beijing, Athens, Carthage, and Rome. And then through the centuries, other cities came to prominence, like London, Paris, Milan, and Venice. And throughout all of them, people lived in packed, relatively unsanitary conditions where the streets were filled with domesticated animals and thus were hotbeds for plagues. Now, interestingly, a plague is not trying to kill you. In the same way that you do not wish to burn down your house, a disease does not want to kill its host. But plagues become deadly when plagues jump species. A plague doesn't know it's living in a human, it thinks it's living in an animal. And what may be the sniffles to a pig can be catastrophic to a human, as we saw with the Spanish flu, which killed 50 million people between 1918 and 1919. The fact that the plague did not think it was in people is what made it so deadly. However, these cases of diseases making the leap between animals and humans are exceptionally rare. It's why people can live on farms their entire lives and never get sick. The odds are astronomically small that a disease will make the jump. But what if you artificially tilted the odds in the favor of the disease? What if you, say, packed a whole bunch of domesticated animals and a whole bunch of people into a very concentrated, unsanitary place? Places like London and Paris and Milan, and recently the street markets of Wuhan. Then you're going to get a plague because the odds were artificially tilted in the favor of diseases making the jump. Even worse, cities didn't naturally grow for most of human history. Their death rates were far higher than their birth rates all the way up into the 19th century. What kept them afloat was people moving into the cities from the country, which meant that diseases never burned through all of their human fuel. If a plague erupted in the town of the middle of nowhere, sure, you might kill off the entire population of the town, but it would stop. It wouldn't have anywhere else to go. But if a plague erupted in the middle of an interconnected web of cities, it will never churn through all of its fuel. And so, the old world endured plague after plague after plague. And over time, they got used to it. Their bodies built up defenses against them. Generations after generations of humanity grew up in the middle of these deadly, invisible killers. Those who couldn't withstand the viruses were killed off. Those who could survived long enough to have children, whose immune systems were stronger and could better fight off the many plagues of the time. They have thousands of years of biological training under their belt. Hundreds of generations of plague survivors whose antibodies who have seen war and have come out the other side. But what happens if you take all those diseases, all these invisible killers, and you unleash them on a population with absolutely no defenses against them? We can tell you from history. Annihilation. Let's go back. All those domesticated animals, they came from the old world. And it wasn't because the people of the old world were better at domesticating animals. It's because the new world had no good animals to domesticate. The only animals in the new world to domesticate were guinea pigs and llamas. Guinea pigs make for nice pets, but have little use other than that. Llamas are subpar compared to the other options. It can provide wool and meat and food, and that's why you see the larger civilizations popping up in South America, but they didn't exist in the same overwhelming numbers as their pig and cow counterparts in the old world. So instead of domesticating animals, they domesticated plants, like potatoes and squash or corn, and they built their cities up around that style of agriculture. And boy, did they grow. Grand, towering cities, vast, sweeping trade networks, massive, competing confederations of tribes. The New World was teeming with life, with 54 million inhabitants in North America compared to the 70 million in Europe in 1492. They were occupying a continent that was lush with life, which had predictable farming seasons and complex, sophisticated cultures. And then the white men arrived, and with their horses and pigs and cows and guns, they brought along something far more deadly, something that would kill far more Native Americans than Spanish steel or shot. They brought along plagues, and they brought it to a population that had absolutely no defenses against them. Smallpox, bubonic plague, chickenpox, cholera, influenza, malaria, measles, scarlet fever, typhoid, typhus, tuberculosis, STDs, and more. Every single one of these plagues smashed into the New World at once. And then their connected trade networks worked against them, carrying devastating diseases to every corner of the continent and leaving devastation in their wake. To call it decimation would be an understatement. In Roman times, decimation was one out of every 10 dead. This was far worse than that. 9 times worse. Because by the times the plagues had ripped their way through North America, 90% of the population would be dead. Understandably, society collapsed. You can imagine if any modern city today lost 9 out of 10 workers, things would just grind to a halt, even with all of our modern technology. The grand, towering cities of South America were abandoned. People scattered. They became fragmented, lost, and isolated tribes, trying to recover from the apocalypse, only to have a healthy, ambitious, advanced, industrial society land on their shores and kick them while they were down. So, the answer to the pioneer's question of where is everybody? The answer is 6 feet deep, buried in the ruins of their empires, because the old world had plagues and the new world did not. Not because one was better and the other was worse, but because one continent had been blessed with animals they could domesticate and the other was not. And so, as the news rails on about coronavirus, I will remind you, plagues are not new, and this one is not novel. Humanity has survived hundreds of outbreaks before, and your ancestors have survived through each and every one of them, because you would not be here if they had not. Your immune system has passed down from generation to generation, has survived the worst that nature has had to throw at humanity, and has come out on top. We have seen what happens when a pandemic blazes through the uninitiated. My country is literally built on top of the ashes of those empires. And knowing what we know, I can promise you, this is not that. COVID-19 is not an extinction-level event. This, too, shall pass, as all plagues have throughout the course of human history. Now, of course, be safe, wash your hands, avoid crowds, don't go around licking subway poles, but rest assured, this is not the end of modern civilization. This is not the end of capitalism. This is not a repeat of what happened here in North America 500 years ago. This is not Armageddon. Be smart, be safe, make good decisions. And as we know from history, this too shall pass. We will get back on track next week as the Rocky Mountain Fur Company continues into the eerily empty West. Until next time, this has been Great History Stories. I'm Mark Syverson.